Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got an on
the option? No,
oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City. I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. And, you know, I've got to say, at the time of recording this, we don't know this information yet, but I want to preemptively say Aaron Tveit finally got his Tony nomination, and we will have found that out by the time this episode comes out.
Dylan,
there's literally two people who could be nominated for lead actor in a musical this year, and he's one of them. So
just two?
Him and Chris McCarroll for Lightning Thief.
Oh my God. Well, you know what? We've been campaigning for Aaron for a long time. For a long time. Especially you, Dylan.
A decade plus, I want to say, you know?
Well, that's great. Yeah, because by the time this comes out, we'll know what these Tonys will be. I mean, they really should have done this a long time ago. I don't know what the holdup was.
I don't think the timing of, like, let's announce Tony nominations weeks before the election is the smartest move. I think maybe Tony nominations in September, a ceremony in October that encourages everyone to vote blue would have made a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I love that idea.
NBC, hello.
Is it on NBC always?
I think so. Or CBS. I think CBS.
Because I remember the 1 year Kristen Chenoweth kept saying, only CBS. Okay, fun. Yeah, there's so much going on in pop culture right now. And yeah. the name on everyone's lips right now is Emily. Emily in Paris.
Yeah.
The new Darren Star Netflix show, which I love.
We finished. Oh, we binged.
We binged it. Oh my God. I loved it. I mean, of course the internet is being so funny about it and saying all these crazy things, but it's like Younger. If you've watched Younger.
Younger meets like the last season of Sex and the City, where Carrie goes and she's with Mikhail Baryshnikov and there's that whole like European chapter.
But isn't that just like the last two episodes?
It felt like it dragged on too long, in my opinion. But.
Well, because they did the two. It was season six was split into 6A and 6B. I don't know if that was like a writer's room thing or HBO ordered two extra seasons or I don't know. I don't know how it really works. I just pretend. But
I know. I just wanted them back in because the fifth girl, New York City, they needed to be back in the city. I didn't want her in Europe. But
Paris is not the fifth girl. It's definitely New York City. But in Emily in Paris, Paris is like the other girl.
Absolutely. It's cute. It's charming. There's very unlikable characters, but I loved the show overall.
I did too. Wait, and I think the most unrealistic part about it is that she would go into like a new work environment and they would actually take her recommendations. Like, I've never been in a work environment where they're like, yes, the new, you know, assistant junior person, let's take all of their social media strategy. Also, wait, how she came in like being a marketing person and she had like 60 followers and then she was
pictures. 46.
We felt so sad for her.
And then she became an influencer overnight.
That was crazy. Her content was like, meh. Sometimes it was interesting, but
no, it was cute. I loved it. It was very millennial. It was like the millennial version of both of the other Darren Star shows we mentioned.
Agree. It was cute. And Gabrielle, her chef almost lover.
I know. No spoilers.
Oof, that's a man, honey. All right. Shall we jump in?
I think we need to bring in our guest. I am so excited.
Me too. Dylan, would you do me the honor of reading the introduction?
With pleasure. Our guest today is one of the most spectacular leading ladies on Broadway, having most recently taken a magic carpet ride 8 times a week in Aladdin on Broadway as Princess Jasmine. She also created the role in the original Australian production. Before debuting on The Great Bright Way, she toured the United States as Gabriella Montez in High School Musical, which we saw in Cleveland, and Nina Rosario in the Heights, we also saw in Cleveland. The role of Nina brought our guest to Broadway in her debut, starring opposite Lin-Manuel Miranda in the closing company of the show. Audiences will also recognize her from Wicked on Broadway as Nessa Rose, Between the Lines, Two Gentlemen of Verona, a rock opera, Into the Woods as the Baker's Wife, opposite icon Titus Burgess as the witch, and much more. Off-Broadway, she's starred in two world premiere shows by Pulitzer-winning playwright and director Nilo Cruz, entitled titled Sotto Voce and Farhad or The Secret of Being. On TV, she's appeared in Taxi Brooklyn, Commander-in-Chief, Disney's 365, and more. You can find her debut album, A Leap in the Dark, live at Feinstein's 54 Below, wherever fine music is available. She's also the mama to the Broadway pup, Quinn. She's the founder of the Girls Camaraderie Project and is a newlywed to hunk JJ Caruncho. Please welcome to drama,
Ariel Jacobs.
Hello, hello. Hi, Connor. Hi, Dylan.
Hello. Welcome to drama.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is so fun.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Listen, we saw you, like Dylan said, you've been in our lives for a long time. I feel like I keep saying this to all of our recent guests. I'm like, you've been in my life for so long, but it's true because being from Cleveland, we had all the great touring shows that came through before, you know, we moved to the city and to New York City later, but we saw the High School Musical stage show and your A Star Was Born moment occurred as Gabriella Montez.
Oh yes, that was so fun. And I worked with Jeff Calhoun who directed that, so I know you guys had him on the show too.
Our pal.
Yeah, yes.
He's actually directing my next show as well.
Right, that's Between the Lines.
Between the Lines, yeah.
Oh, and he's very excited about that. He's excited to like be working with some new collaborators too. So we are hopeful that'll come when everything comes back, right?
Because
it was supposed to happen in April, right?
Yeah, we were supposed to start previews in April and open in May, and then we got pushed to next year. It was supposed to be the same slot, but now because the Broadway shutdown is extended, who knows when we're going to open and where, because actually we were going to be at Second Stage, and then and then that didn't happen. So
oh, that's true.
So now I'm not
sure.
And
this is based on a Jodi Picoult novel, right? So did I say her last name right?
You did. Congratulations.
Like Pico de Gallo.
Yes, exactly. But spelled with an L and a T. O-U-L.
Picoult.
Uh-huh. Most people say Jodi Picoult, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And her daughter, Samantha Van Leer, wrote the book together. And they wrote the sequel off the page together as well, which is so cool because the book is written by a mother and a daughter, and the story is really the relationship of the single mom and her daughter. And as the daughter, who's me, goes through this journey of having a really hard time at school, a hard time at home, and escaping into the world of reading books. And
oh my gosh.
Meeting a prince in one of the books she's reading and wanting to, you know, share her life with him, but he's in a book and she's in the real world. And then what do? Drama.
It's drama. Okay. You've got me hook, line, and sinker.
I know. Wait, who was scheduled to play your mom?
It's Julia Murney.
Oh yes. I knew that. Oh my God.
We love Julia.
And actually, I've been a part of the show for a few years in all the workshops and stuff. And it was the first workshop, I think, that my mom was Mandy Gonzalez.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's perfect casting.
It's been a few, and then we did a concert version at the 92nd Y two or three years ago. And my mom, my mom was Victoria Clark.
Oh my goodness.
So I've had a lot of moms.
That's so fun. Oh my goodness.
I hope it finds a home when we're back.
I do too. And it will. I know it will. It's just, who knows? Because, you know, the future of theater is up in the air.
It's so uncertain. It really is. Really,
and it's like the only industry that is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It makes me so upset because TV and film and, you know,
everything
basketball.
Else, yes, because everything else can have better COVID precautions. Everything else can have people spread out and everybody on the crew in masks and nobody there as a live audience, whereas theater, that's what it's about.
Right. Yeah, it's so true. People are used to watching a basketball game from their couch.
Right.
You know, it's not, I think maybe one day, you know, as theater hopefully becomes more accessible, we'll be more used to watching, you know, for example, like Hamilton on Disney Plus, like that was a great experience, but it was a little bit jarring because I'm not used to watching a full blown musical from home where there's all these distractions and you're not feeling the energy of the performers or the other people experiencing it with you right there, you know? So I think maybe one day once it's on streaming platforms more, like for example, Diana, which will be on Netflix at some point.
Okay, how are they going to shoot that? Is it going to be shot the same way that they did Hamilton?
I think so, but I don't think there's an audience.
Oh, and I know that the Aladdin is going to, because they shot the stage version of Aladdin in London, and I know that's coming to Disney Plus too. So that's going to be fun for people to see.
Who do you know who was playing Aladdin and Jasmine in that one?
Yeah, Aladdin was Ainsley Mellum, who was my Australian Aladdin, and we also got reunited on Broadway. And Isabel McCullough, Izzy McCullough, is going to be Jasmine.
Izzy, that's right. Nice. Yeah.
Wait, so we actually saw Aladdin on Broadway like right before you went back in past February, sadly. I know, but it was so good. I had never seen
it. You saw it when?
We saw it like early February.
I think we actually saw it end of January.
Oh, my brain.
This
it
year?
Had Cliff. This year. Or maybe you just weren't in that night.
I might have been out sick. I had a lot of medical stuff happen in January. So I was in the show through first week of March. And I mean, until the Broadway shutdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, then we just missed you. I'm sad because we've seen you in all of your other, stuff.
Darn.
Okay, wait. Going back to the High School Musical show.
Yes.
So what was it like? Because that was the sensation of the mid-2000s was, I mean, I guess an example of a musical that people were watching from home.
Yes.
And it just completely exploded. I mean, made stars out of its leads and the songs, everybody knows them, even if they don't want to admit it. What was it like jumping into the Hamilton of 2006? I'm just gonna say it.
Well, I didn't know. You know, I didn't. You know, the first time that I heard about what High School Musical at all was because I went to an audition for Finding Nemo at Disneyland because I was living in LA, and the casting director was like, "You look like this girl who." From High School Musical. Like, do you know that you look like this girl from High School Musical? And they were planning to create some sort of Disneyland theme park High School Musical thing. He gave me his cell phone number. He's like, I want you to call me because you look like this girl from High School Musical and we're going to need you. So I left there. I did not book Finding Nemo at the time, but I called my agent and I said, hey, apparently I look like this girl from this movie called High School Musical. And I researched it when I got home and I found out they were planning a world premiere stage version in Atlanta. And that's where I said to my agent, I need to get in the room for this. And I had like zero credits at the time. So he got me in the room and Jeff Calhoun said I was the very last person they saw in their audition process because they were like, who's this girl? And then...
yeah.
I actually did it. I had such a like little auditioning experience at the time that they gave me an audition packet. It was huge. It was so many songs and scenes. And my boyfriend at the time, I said to him, okay, I learned this song. Do I really need to learn the third song? I don't want to learn the third song. They're not going to ask for all of it, right? He looked at me like I was crazy because he had been in the business for a little bit. And he was like, yes, you need to learn the third song, which I'm very glad that he made me learn it because I had to do it in the room and I would have definitely not known what I was doing.
So did they have you do When There Was Me and You?
Yes, that was part of the audition packet. And okay. I think that was exactly the one where I was like, what is this? And I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And then you obviously like that was like your way in with Disney. Is that then like do you think that that's what eventually led to you booking Aladdin?
I mean, it probably didn't hurt, but I don't know. I mean, I'd seen my brother in the role because I saw them in when they were out of town in Seattle and then I saw them in Toronto and then of course so many times on Broadway. But I always wanted to be Princess Jasmine. Every time I saw him in the show, I was like, oh, that's such a good role, and this is such a good show, and man, I can't do it with my brother. when do I get to do it?
Yeah, right.
I think that Courtney Reed, who was Jasmine, is the first one who suggested my name to our director, Casey Nicola, when they were casting for Australia. And she was like, you should bring her in. And then they made me come audition, and I was very lucky.
That's sisterhood right there. I love that.
And you said to your brother, you were like, dude, why didn't you submit me?
That's so funny. But that actually did happen. He did. That is how I got my first agent, which is another funny story. Because he had his first agent from his college showcase, because he went to NYU, which I went to later as well.
Right.
But he had an agent for a little while, and then he, you know, back in the day, you had to deliver hard copy headshots and resumes.
Yes. I've heard stories about that.
But. Yeah. But so he had to constantly replenish their files. And so he would bring his headshots and resumes in a pile and drop them off. Well, one day I was at NYU. At the time, I was a sophomore, I think. Maybe a junior. I don't know. But I got a call on my cell phone, and it was the agency. And they were like, "Hi, are you Adam Jacobs' sister?" "Yes." "Would you like to come in and have a meeting with us, or, you know, have a chat about possible representation?" And I was like, "Yes." So they booked me a time. I got to go in and have like a 10-minute meeting, and then that went well. So then they had me come audition for them. I had to do 2 songs and a monologue. And that happened because my brother, not telling anyone, he didn't tell them, he didn't tell me, but when he took his headshot and resume stack, he slipped one of mine in the middle of his pile. So as they were submitting him for stuff, they came across my headshot and resume, and
that's so special. Oh my goodness.
That's cute.
Okay, he's a good brother.
He's a good brother,
truly.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. That's so cool. Okay, so you were at NYU and you had your agent before showcase then.
Yeah, I did. So I actually got my equity. And then, so I was auditioning and got cast in my equity card show that I got my equity card for. It was a summer stock gig in West Virginia at the Contemporary American Theater Festival. So that was before graduation. So I was pretty lucky because I got my equity card even before showcase.
Wow. So did you still ultimately do a showcase with your class and everything? Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Wait, I forgot to ask you a very important question that we ask all of our guests before we even deep dive into everything. But are you doing well? Like, how have you been doing in the midst of all this pandemic? And I mean, it's been 6 months since you got married. And
yes. So my wedding was right before Broadway shut down. I was supposed to, my wedding was on a Friday, and it was in Mexico, so it was a destination wedding.
Oh, fine.
In Tulum. So then we came back to New York on Sunday, and I started back in my 8 shows a week on Tuesday. And I was supposed to have 2 weeks left before my contract was over. And after the next day, on Wednesday, they was like, okay, Broadway's done. Broadway shut down. Which I didn't know till Thursday. So, of course, I played my last show as Jasmine, and I did not even realize it was my last show.
Ugh.
It was the end of this 2-year journey on Broadway plus 6 months in Australia. And I felt like it was just poof, like it was just gone. It was just, you know, stolen from me.
There's no closure there then with that role.
Exactly. It was so bizarre. It felt weird to not have closure for the role, but also just to not have that closure with the family that I've grown to love and see every day for years. It was really weird. So then we left New York because we didn't want to stay here because it was getting real crazy. And we live in a high-rise apartment building. I did not want to be in shared spaces, shared air vents, and like you don't know how this viruses.
Oh, there were so many unknowns in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we found out that yes, it is airborne. So yes, you need to not be in shared spaces with people without a mask. So we escaped New York and went to Florida. We went to Miami, where my husband's family is, and we wanted to be safe. And we were really lucky to be there. So it's been a journey, and now we're back in New York. And I'm okay. I'm really lucky because none of my family has been affected. Well, my brother, half-brother, had COVID, and he's fine now. He got through it. And it's affecting my family in other ways, though, because my dad has Alzheimer's.
Oh.
And he's just, like, within the last month, has gone into a memory care facility where he can be taken care of better.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the virus, it's they have very strict visitation hour. Like, you can't visit. You can see him through a window for 5 seconds and wave. But it's just really hard on
my
mom and my family and for him, because, you know, he doesn't really know what's going on, and his family can't even be there to hang out with him. So that's been the most challenging thing that we've been struggling with. And then also the uncertainty of not knowing when we're going to have performing jobs or opportunities again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's also unknown, but I'm trying to keep my head up, and I'm actually starting a business outside of the theater. So, yeah. So my husband and I have a couple things going on. We're creating a voice lesson masterclass series where people can take singing lessons with us.
Amazing.
And then we're also creating this company called Sancta Via, and it's a wellness company that's a combination of physical training. It's like a longevity focused art that is a practice where you focus on a combination of physical training with meditation, performance psychology, breath work, nutrition, and it's all of this stuff in one. So you really get to learn how to take care of your body and your wellness as much as you can, and do things that will keep you in tip-top shape as you age, and help you get to learn your body and what your body does, what your muscles do, like all of the things that we should learn, because we have these incredible instruments of the human body and we don't even know how they work. So so it's been really fun creating that. And so that's another chapter that's starting right now.
Oh my God, congrats. You've sold Connor. He's already ready to be like a brand representative for you.
Thanks.
Done. Literally, I was like, wait, I want to join.
It's amazing, yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I'm really happy for you that you've been able to use this time to, I don't want to use the word pivot, but I suppose just direct your energy towards positive momentum for your, you know, personal and professional life. That's great.
Thank you. And it's, whenever people start something new, they're like, oh, are you giving up performing? Are you giving up acting? You're like, no, I'm not. I can do multiple things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And actually right now, because people are stuck at home, and Sancta Via is going to be offering online classes, online courses, and people want to be able to still, you know, feel physical and train their bodies and feel like they're part of a class environment and get, you know, wisdom, but not be able to go to the gym. It, like, and you don't need to go to a gym. Like, we teach all body weight stuff, so you don't need weights. You don't need any of that. So
I've heard amazing things about body weight training and exercise.
It is the real deal.
Oh, that's so exciting.
That's amazing.
And I love that you get to work with your hubby on that. Like, how fun.
And I'm learning so much, because I am in front of the camera demonstrating certain exercises sometimes, but I'm also behind the camera. I'm doing, like, the cinematography. I'm doing the audio. I'm making sure that everything's working. I'm producing. I'm the behind-the-scenes producer at the same time.
And that's no small thing. That's huge props to you, because I mean, we self-produce this podcast with our friend Maggie, but other than that, it is such a learning experience.
It's
people,
such a learning
only
curve.
See the finished product. Mm-hmm. That, like, it is so incredible that you're taking the time to learn all of this and do it. I'm excited to see.
Thank you. That's one of the things that we talk about, is like the idea of when you're failing at something, how to reframe it in your head, because you're not, if you think, oh, I'm failing, then it's just like stopping you in your tracks. But if you think, this is okay, I'm experiencing failure at this thing, it's new, but every time you experience failure, you're aware of what, you know, it's like you learn your blind spots. It shines a light on what you need to know, so that you can address it and that you can get better, so that you can learn and you can grow. But if you just keep telling yourself that you're a failure, you won't be able to see the bigger picture. You're just going to stop and give up.
That's really great. I feel like I'm getting a lot out of this area. Oh my God. I'm thinking about the Lady Gaga lyric, "My biggest enemy is me," from her song 911. And I'm like,
oh, good.
It's true, right?
Yes.
Like, Oh my God. I'm having like, I consistently continue to injure my foot and I have surgery on it, all this stuff. Oh my gosh. It's been like a year long struggle, but I just re-injured it again doing, I don't know what. And I think a lot of it's in my head, about like what my road to recovery looks like. Mm-hmm. So having that reminder that like I can reframe it and learn from it is invaluable.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think about it like a science experiment. Like, okay, that didn't work. What do I need to try next?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm happy for you. This is going to be so great. Do you like working with your husband?
Yes, I do. And we have the best time because one of the things that we are really into in the company, and also one of the things that we like to teach, is like, you don't have to be so serious when you're training. A lot of people think that when I'm getting strong, that it's all like serious, but it doesn't have to be. You can still smile and be goofy and at the same time learn how to be powerful and strong person. So he's constantly trying to make me laugh while I'm behind the camera. that's been fun. And we bring our dog to work. So
yes.
Quinn, the Broadway pup, gets to come and hang out with us.
Oh my God, the wedding photos of you with Quinn were so adorable. Everyone needs to look on your Instagram. Also, your dress was absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you. I picked it. I tried on several dresses in one day, and then I was like, oh, but this one, I just feel like the combination of bohemian / goddess / just like, and the long bell sleeves, the whole thing was, so the other thing was, it was too late to get it created. This company really only makes handmade dresses. So they were going to take way too long to make it because they're all made by hand in New Zealand. And then they had to ship it to me. So instead, I was able to get the sample sale dress and then just get it tailored to fit me perfectly. Mm-hmm. But the lady who was tailoring it in Brooklyn was like, you keep losing weight. This isn't working. Stop changing your weight. But I was doing Sanctavia and I was like getting fit and I was like also playing Jasmine. So you got to maintain looks when you're wearing nothing on
Absolutely.
Stage.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Wait, okay. So I also saw that you and your husband were doing something on Instagram on Fridays, right? Is this was the Fan Friday live stream?
Yes. So every Friday we have a live stream and it's funny. I started this when I was doing Jasmine on Broadway a year ago or something. So before the show started every day, I would sit in my dressing room and just turn the live stream on and like talk to fans and answer questions. Mm-hmm. But eventually Disney didn't want me to do it anymore because they were like, we want people to see you and see Jasmine. They didn't want to see me in Jasmine clothes but not playing Jasmine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So so now I do it at home and JJ and I will talk to fans. We have a theme song that I wrote.
it's so
really
cute.
Fun. We have fans from all over the world. Who actually come every week to talk to us. We have people from Japan, we have people from Brazil, we have people from Mexico, we have people from London and Hong Kong and Australia and New Zealand and all over the US. And they ask questions and we kind of just talk about life and sing some songs and I love it. I love it because it's such a fun thing that's on a schedule. So you know it's every Friday. You can rely on it and they can rely on us because we're here for them. And it's a time for people to look forward to because we're just hanging out and chilling and making fun times and telling jokes.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I know. It's so fun. I've tuned in before and it is just the chemistry the two of you have as well is just so pure and so fun. I actually saw the two of you perform at Robbie Rozelle's Tuesdays at 54 show.
Oh, yes.
Last January, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And it was so, so amazing. This was before you got married, actually.
Yes,
so
it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we sang Move On from Sunday in the Park with George.
Oh.
We love that song.
That's great. So is your husband a performer as well?
He is, yeah. And he just sang at the Kennedy Center with Titus Burgess for Titus's solo show. Not
your
the
pal.
Kennedy Center. No, Carnegie Hall. Sorry. He just sang with Titus at Carnegie Hall. Yeah. And Titus was in our wedding party. He was one of his groomsmen.
Oh my! So oh, did you fun. Did you meet Titus through doing Into the Woods together?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No. So JJ and Titus met years ago, back when Titus was teaching voice lessons, which he doesn't do anymore because he's way too busy. Uh-huh. But JJ was taking voice lessons with him for years, and they became friends.
Oh, I love that. Oh. Mm-hmm. I need to ask about, because you played the baker's wife, one of the most iconic roles of all time. What was that production like? Because I know that there were some adjustments made, obviously, with Titus being the witch. What were some of the other specific changes that were in a part of that production?
Well, that was the main change. I mean, the other thing was okay. the colorblind casting.
Yes.
Which, you know, everyone's saying, oh, you guys are so edgy. You're having like a Brazilian Rapunzel. You have an Italian Cinderella. You have a Filipino baker's wife. You have a Cuban baker. You have a black male witch. Like, you guys are doing everything so risky. And JJ wrote this letter that got posted on Broadway World at the time, because he was like, this shouldn't be outside the norm. This is like, mm-hmm. why are you expecting them to all be white and this is different? Like,
yep.
this, yes. first of all, these are fairy tale characters, number one. And number two, nobody else in the audience is thinking these things. They're all just coming in and seeing a show with characters that are real people. So
yes.
what, you know, a lot of people who saw the show didn't even know the show before, and so they didn't even know that the witch was a woman, and they didn't think twice.
Yeah, right.
Oh, it's so true. And we talked about this with Anna Viafani a few weeks ago about the uproar about Ariel in the Little Mermaid movie being black, and how everyone was being like insanely racist and terrible about it. And it's like, why in our heads do these characters have these preset races? Like, it doesn't make any sense at all. It's like, especially with, like you said, fairy tale characters.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I know the same thing happened, speaking of Little Mermaid, the same thing happened to the national tour, because the girl playing right. Ariel on the tour was Asian-American.
Asian.
And they didn't like that. So it's just, you know, people need to loosen up and allow anyone to play any character.
Mm-hmm.
It also can't be so, you know, like, it can't be like only Latinos can play Latino characters and only black people can play black characters and only Chinese can play Chinese. Yes, I get it. If the role is specific to that character and it's about that culture. Yes, mm-hmm. I get yes. it. But if like the script says, you know, I don't know, German woman walks into a store and buys the thing. Yeah. Like, it can be anybody. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. If it says woman walks into a store, it can be anyone. So, yes. I think it's just about letting any ethnicity play any character that's not about a specific culture.
Yes, because you know who it doesn't matter for, especially with the Disney shows, is it doesn't matter to the kids. They don't exactly. care at all. Like exactly. it's ridiculous.
It also can be very limiting if we get to a place where you can only play the ethnicity that you are. Because mm-hmm. okay, I am half white, half Filipina, and Jewish, Russian, Polish, Dutch sprinkled in. But what does that allow me to play? There are no roles written for half white, half Filipino girls.
Right, right.
So, if it gets to the place where if you are Latina and you can only play Latina, that's going to be bad for them, too.
Mm-hmm. You are speaking truth. I appreciate your perspective on this so much. It's with the world being what it was, I really hope that Broadway comes back and has wider eyes to everything that's going on here, because it's necessary for, especially, you know, representation matters.
It does. It really does. You know what? I read this thing about how after Brave came out, how many little girls started taking up archery lessons.
Oh, that's so cute. Aww.
Because they saw this cool character who did archery. And also the Hunger Games. Same thing happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Archery had archery a moment.
Yeah.
People were really into archery for a while.
That's beautiful. Okay, so not to change the topic way too much, but we were talking about what you're up to now. Let's go back in time to the moment when you realized that you loved the arts or performing you know, theater, music, whatever it was, we call it a ring of keys moment, because it's that moment of recognition when you thought, oh, I want to be a part of that. Do you feel like you have a ring of keys moment?
Well, the only thing I know that really affected me, there were a few things as a kid. One was watching The Wizard of Oz, because I was obsessed with that movie. I would watch it, you know, at least twice a week. And still, to this day, I love singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's one of my favorite songs.
It's incredible.
Yes. That was definitely one thing that I loved, because in my eyes, I was like, oh, that was even before I saw musical theater. So I was like, movie musicals, that's what I want to do. I want to do movie musicals, because I just loved the singing and acting put together. The other thing I used to do as a kid, two. One is I would play the soundtrack of Sunset Boulevard in my house.
Ooh.
And I would act out and choreograph the whole show.
I love it. Amazing.
I was like, what, 8 years old? Just like,
I hope there were some costumes too. I hope you had the sunglasses and big jacket.
Oh yeah. And I also would play Harry Connick Jr. It had to be you. It had to be you. And I would blast it on my boombox, and I would carry it out onto my front lawn, and I would put on a show for nobody. There was no one out there, but I was pretend that I had an audience.
That's so cute.
Yeah, oh my goodness. I just loved it.
Now, was this when you were living in, it was called Half Moon Bay, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because you tell your origin story so beautifully in your album that was at Fine Science 54 Below, but
yes, which, oh my god, that reminds me. Okay, so we were doing prep for your episode, mm-hmm. and we were like, oh my god, Ben Moss keeps popping up everywhere. We had Ben on the podcast, and we're friends, and he sends his love. But we were like, oh my god, I love this duo.
Oh, it's oh my gosh, singing with Ben at that piano, and then singing with him, because he has a voice of God as well.
Seriously.
I love collaborating with him. He is such a the way that he interprets and expresses music. It's like he's from another earth. I mean, he's from the heavens, and now he's on earth.
Truly,
literally, bury that, bury that. Yeah, he's awesome. But like Dylan was saying, you do tell your origin story so well.
Thank you. My husband actually helped. He wrote the script after interviewing me for 23 hours about my life. And then he directed it. And so he's helped me with that quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. It flowed. Awesome. The music choices were incredible. And I actually worked at 54 for up until the pandemic happened. So that place is so special to me. And you see so many solo shows or debuts where people tell their stories. And when people nail it, they nail it. And if anyone wants like a good model of it, they need to listen to your album, because it is so, I mean, it's also heartbreakingly beautiful at times. I mean, and in fact, when you were talking about Between the Lines, I saw some parallels to your own life, just about school troubles and sort of losing yourself in art and whatnot. So that's probably cool to be able to take on that role and add that personal touch to it.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And Jodi Picoult's been saying that to me for a while too. She's like, you were bullied in school too. You are Delilah.
You're like, yay.
Yes.
Don't replace me.
Yeah. Actually, she's the one who found me for the role. What's so funny. I didn't audition for it. Initially, they were in the workshops back when they were doing readings and workshops and, you know, writing the scripts to make it what they wanted. Jodi Picoult was scouring YouTube and found my video of me singing When Will My Life Begin from Tangled. And she freaked out. She's like, that's our Delilah. That's her.
Mm.
And so she's like, call her agent. And then I was offered the role for the workshop. So it was just so lucky. And it's just a reminder of how you got to put yourself out there. So many people are afraid to make videos, afraid to, you know. And when I made those videos, I made three at the time that I put online. I made When Will My Life Begin and Colors of the Wind and Let It Go. And I put them on YouTube from the same like one day session. And people at the time were like, why are you doing this? Did you book something? Are you trying to book something? And I was like, no, I did it because I thought it was fun. So that, I mean, if you love performing, don't be afraid to put your stuff out there where people can see it, because you never know what can come of that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So wonderful. Such wonderful advice. Okay, so one of Connor and I's favorite musicals of all time is In the Heights. And I know you did the tour. How did you ultimately end up in the closing company on Broadway of In the Heights? Because wasn't Jordan Sparks playing the role?
Yes, yes.
Did you replace her?
I did.
Oh my gosh, how fun.
So I was on the tour for a year. And at the end of the year, I was like, should I stay on the tour? Should I renew my contract and extend, or should I not? And at the time, I thought, you know, I really want to get a chance to play this role on Broadway. So maybe I should leave the tour, because if I'm available for the role, I always think the producers are going to do what's easiest for them, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, thinking like a business person. Like, if I was a producer, I would just keep her where she is and find somebody else. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to leave the tour, and I'm going to hope that if I'm available, then the next time that the role on Broadway is available, after Jordan Sparks is done, mm-hmm. then I get to, maybe they'll call me. Maybe I have my costumes. Yeah. I know the show. I'm ready. So I leave the tour. And 2 days later, I find out that they announced that the Broadway show is closing. And I was so devastated, because I had left the show because I wanted that chance. And then I was like, oh gosh, they're going to close the show on Broadway. You know, why now would they recast it? They have Jordan Sparks. Why would they recast it? So I called my mom and I was really upset. And she was like, well, maybe Jordan Sparks wants to take a vacation. Like, why don't you just have your agent call them and see if she wants a vacation, and then you can go make your Broadway debut. And I was like, I don't think that's how it works.
I love mom logic.
It's so cute.
But I was like, you know what? If I don't make this phone call, I'll always think, what if, right? So I called my agent and I was like, this is the craziest idea. Blame my mom. But can you call and see if there's a chance I could fill in, or like what's going on there? Because it was it was over Christmas and New Year's, and I was like, maybe she wants a week off.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Yeah. So my agent called, and they were like, oh, well, actually, you know, Jordan's going to be leaving, and we would love to have Ariel come play Nina for the last 2 months before the show closes. So that's just, I was like, are you kidding me? It worked.
Incredible.
Yes.
Mother knew best.
So great.
Yes. Mother knows best.
You were great as Nina. And I remember you had a short haircut.
I know. I miss my short haircut.
It was so cute. I always say that I think In the Heights is just like a perfect musical. The way the songs blend with the story, it is just all right there. You can't watch it without crying at something.
Yes.
And it's just, but it's also so joyful. Oh my God, it's the best.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's also the first, I was just talking about this with someone yesterday, that In the Heights was the first time that I felt this, it really gives you this connection to your culture that you don't know, like what was it like for my grandparents, you know, what was it like for them living in the Philippines, what was it like, and I know that In the Heights is a Latino story, but what's so cool about it is how many people would come up to me afterwards or write me letters and basically say what I was already feeling, which is like, this makes me want to know more about the people who came before me and my family. I want to know my family's history. I want to know my stories that are in my blood that I don't know about. So I don't know that I'd ever felt that before In the Heights.
Mm. Oh, that's beautiful. It does go to show that you can take, it's like when people will say like, when, you know, straight people don't want to watch films about gay people because they're like, oh, I don't know if there's much there for me, but it's like, you know, we can get anything from any kind of art if it moves you.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, I've been taking things from straight stories for my entire life. Yeah. And I'm like, I want to, like, I'm watching Emily in Paris. And I'm like, wait, I want to find a French chef to fall in love with. But I'm not kidding. But anyway, but you're right. That's so beautiful. Oh my God. What a great.
I have one impact. Question just about the In the Heights experience. I have heard legends of the final performance on Broadway of just some of the audience participation, and there were like flags in the audience. And what was that, like, that final show of In the Heights like?
I mean, that final weekend, it was like the both Saturday and Sunday. I can't even put it into words. It was so momentous. It felt like a moment in history that the celebration in that theater was off the charts. It was like, yes, people had their flags. And, you know, they all had their cell phones up for blackout like they always do in every city on tour, yes. Too. But I, you know, the celebration that they had, it was like you could see how much this show meant to them because they were seeing themselves on stage. Mm. And every character that came on was celebrated with applause and shouting and standing ovations so many times throughout the show. And... It was like the whole thing was just felt electric. Similar to when I did High School Musical.
Like I love that.
Fiery excitement, you know, that was out there for that show.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Oh my goodness.
I love it. All right, so we are wrapping up now, and we like to end on what we call a dose of drama, mm-hmm. which could be, you know, that piece of culture you've been consuming, an interaction you had on the street, anything that's on your mind at all, whether you're feeling dramatic about it or not. Do either of you have a dose of drama? Dylan, do you want to kick it off today?
So it's obviously spooky season, and I am trying my best to get in the spirit. And it's, with everything going on, it's tough, but I've been revisiting some of my favorite Halloween classics. Like, I have yet to watch Hocus Pocus, but I will soon. But watched the 1978 Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis. It is a masterpiece. If you're not a scary movie person, I still think it's a great movie with not, like, we're probably more accustomed to different types of scares now, so it feels like a vintage type of scare. Honestly, Me and My Neighborhood Walks is me as Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode wandering the neighborhood with Michael staring me down because I'm rocking my Biden Harris t-shirt. That's literally me all the time. But I would say my dose is, I found a scary-ish series on HBO Max called The Murders at White House Farm, and it is a scary true crime fictionalized version of it. It is only 6 episodes. It is so crazy, and the twists are so cool, and I think that it's definitely worth the watch if you want to kind of get in the spooky spirit.
Love it. I did watch it with you, and I can say
Connor braved
it. I usually true crime scares the crap out of me. I can do like fictional horror, but the idea of knowing that it was actually happened, it makes me not be able to sleep at night, for real. I love it. All right, my dose of drama. I kind of mentioned this earlier, but I'm having all this trouble with my foot. Aww. And it is my health. You know, I've been saying all the year, and I still am, that I'm lucky to have my health. But one of the one things that has kept me kind of sane every day is fitness, and becoming injured again has been a wrench in the machine that I did not see coming. So just send me your good healing vibes, because truly it like hurt I was wrestling for a while, but it hurts to like walk around the neighborhood like Dylan as Laurie Strode. Mm-hmm. So it's been dark, but I'm learning new ways to exercise that don't involve so much impact on my foot. So maybe it has been a learning lesson after all. I don't know, but I'm feeling dramatic about it, of course, because I'm a baby. Arielle, do you have a dose of drama?
Yes, I was going to share a podcast that I've been really loving. But before I do that, I do feel dramatic about a few things. And one of them has to do with the people who wear their masks under their nose.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like the people who wear their masks so it's covering their mouth but not their nose.
Mm-hmm.
You know that does not help, right?
It's like, ridiculous.
These people who are thinking, as long as my mouth is covered, they can't get this virus that's coming out the air, coming out of my nose.
Uh-huh. Oh my God, it's so real.
I cannot stand it when that happens. Or the people who like leave it under their chin, you know? They're like, they're wearing it, but it's on their chin. Why?
I've seen people lower it to talk.
Yes, exactly.
Like they have their mask on.
That happened today, like, to me. I was the whole point of a mask. I was on a plane because I had to be, not because I wanted to be. But there was a guy across the aisle. He had the mask on his face correctly. And he had to sneeze, and he removed it to sneeze.
And I was like,
are you crazy? Like, the point of the mask is to catch your sneeze and your breath.
Horror.
But,
yeah.
Anyway, that was the dramatic
And that's
annoyance.
Real drama.
I had to
that's
share that.
Drama.
But then,
no,
so then
you.
There's this podcast I really like.
Yeah.
And it's called The Happiness Lab. It's so cool because this woman who's a Yale professor, her name is Dr. Lori Santos, and she talks about the science of happiness, and she talks to different scientists about happiness. And lately she's been doing these history lessons where she talks about different people who and what their idea of happiness, like what did they say about happiness, like the Buddha, like she gives you like a history lesson on the Buddha and what his life was like and what he said about happiness, and then one about Epictetus, who was like the creator of Stoicism, and then one about Plato and one about Aristotle. And I'm like, it's really cool because the way that she shares these stories just makes it so easy to understand and really entertaining. You know, a lot of people would never want to read stuff by Aristotle and Plato because they're like, ugh, heavy, you know,
sure,
so serious, so like complicated. But the way she talks about it is really, really easy to digest and really fun.
That sounds familiar. The Happiness Lab, it sounds familiar. I feel like they might have had a YouTube channel at some point, or if it's a larger company. I don't know if that's just something new, but I need to look into this because I think we all need a little bit more happiness right now.
That's amazing.
Well, I sure have felt happy talking to you, Ariel. You are so wonderful and smart and insightful. Even with everything you've got going on with your family and in the world, you've stayed resilient. And Connor and I have been fans for so long. And so this was truly a treat to be able to chat with you and learn a little bit more about you.
Thank you, guys. It was so fun to chat with you as well. And I appreciate you having me on your podcast. It's just great. And I hope that everyone enjoys it and that you get more and more amazing, amazing shows.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, everybody, follow Ariel at Ariel Jacobs on Twitter and Instagram. Follow at The Drama Podcast. Follow me at Connor McDowell.
Me at Dylan McDowell. And check out our merch that's flying off the shelves. And check out our Patreon and be part of the Drama Club, or as we're calling it, Patreama. Patreon plus drama equals Patreama. Get into it. Connor, we will see you next time.
And everybody vote.
Drama.